You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Internationally best-selling crime novelist Ian Rankin retired his beloved character, Inspector John Rebus, after he'd appeared in a series of 18 mysteries. In his latest novel, The Complaints, Mr. Rankin introduces a new protagonist, Malcolm Fox, an investigator in the Complaints Division, the cops who investigate other cops. It is published by Reagan Arthur Books, Little Brown and Company, and I'm very pleased that it brings Ian Rankin to our show today. Welcome back.
Good to meet you again.
Now, the Complaints Division is the equivalent of the Internal Affairs Divisions in most police departments here.
Yeah, it's a nickname they're given because it's complaints against the cops by members of the public usually is what they're investigating.
This novel, like all of your others, is a complicated crime mystery. How do you craft such complex and intricate plots? Do you pretty much know what you're going to be doing when you start?
No. I mean, it's interesting you should ask me that because I've got the next novel in the series with me on this trip, on this tour. It's the first draft, which nobody ever gets to see except me because it's very rough. There are big capitalized sections in the middle of pages saying, oh, maybe this is the guy who was there. Go back and change that. And all the way through it, I am in the first draft of the book, I am the detective. I am finding out who these characters are and how they relate to each other and what roles they might play. And so I don't know the ending when I start the book.
So the second draft is kind of tying up the loose ends that you created in the first draft.
The second draft is putting – the first draft really is about making sure that the plot works. I mean, I think that's very important for a mystery novel. You've got to make sure the plot works. The second and third drafts put some meat on the bones of it. You get three-dimensional characters and you get a theme and you get a sense of place.
Second and third drafts. Now, you have written over 20 novels in something like 25 years. So you're doing a lot of drafts very quickly, aren't you?
The first draft is very quick. It takes me a long time to get an idea, get a theme, get a plot. It takes me a little while then to do the research. The first draft usually takes about 40 days. And I write it probably every day. So, you know, just over a month after starting, I'll have the first draft. And then, then you just kind of polish and polish and polish. And you do as much of that as you feel necessary or right up until a deadline. I mean, deadlines are a wonderful thing.
Well, is writing fast part of what makes a book fast-paced?
I think that might have something to do with it. I mean, if you talk to mystery authors and thriller writers in general, they're often bemused that literary authors take 10 years to write their masterpiece or 5 years to write a book. I mean, what are they doing? You know, they're obviously sitting around watching daytime TV or listening to radio or reading a newspaper or something. It doesn't take that long to write a book. But yeah, I think if you write it quickly, it does inject pace into it. And also, it means that I don't literally lose the plot. If I was writing it very slowly and taking days off between, then I would start to forget all these different tangents and all these different red herrings.
Well, those literary writers don't have a recurring character usually. And to some degree, weren't you helped by the fact that you always knew that you were going to be doing something with Inspector John Rebus?
No, it was never planned as a series. I mean, the first book was meant to be the last book. I killed him off in the first draft. He died. But by the second draft, I brought him back to life. I think I was probably 3 or 4 books in before I thought there was some mileage in this guy. I was enjoying spending time with him. There was information about himself he was holding back from me. And I decided that a cop was a very good way of looking at society, a very good way of looking at a city and the various layers of that city. I didn't know he was going to be there for 17 books. And, of course, in the end, time was the killer, as it were, because a cop I know in Edinburgh said, you know, Rebus has got to retire at 60.
Because you were doing real time.
Yeah, he lived in real time. So the first book was written in 87 and he was 40. So 2007, he would have to be 60. And he had, you know, cops at that time had to retire at 60. So it was an enforced retirement. I wasn't fed up with him and he wasn't fed up with me.
Oh, you weren't looking forward to his retirement as he might have been looking.
Well, he isn't looking forward to his retirement, which is why he hasn't really retired. He's working as a civilian for the police. I know exactly what he's doing.
Does that mean he's going to come back sometime?
I've just written back at Christmas, I wrote a short story for an English newspaper and it was Rebus and his colleague Siobhan and it was great fun to get inside their heads again or to have them inside my head. So maybe we're not quite done with Rebus yet.
Well, since you figured out somewhere along the line that you were going to have this recurring figure, when you came up with the new protagonist, Malcolm Fox, did you try to give him the kinds of qualities that would allow you to return to him?
I was very lucky with Malcolm Fox that I thought, you know, the problem was going to be people thinking, oh, it's a crime novel, it's set in Edinburgh, it's by Ian Rankin, it's just Rebus light. It's Rebus with a different hair colour or a different eye colour. But because it was the complaints, because it was internal affairs, I knew that the guy would have to have a very different mentality, a very different philosophy from Rebus. He couldn't be a bull in a china shop. He couldn't be a maverick. He couldn't be an anarchic. He would be a team player. He would be slow and cautious. He would always be whiter than white. He'd never cross the line in a way that Rebus did. And so that was interesting to me. How much mileage there is in that, I'm not sure, because the internal affairs has such a narrow remit. They don't go and chase killers and things and huge conspiracies.
On the other hand, they have the constant enmity of other police officers. Even the totally honest ones hate them.
It's one of these things, you know, and you know, maybe you don't know yourself, but if there's a knock at the door and I open it and there's a cop in uniform standing on the doorstep, I think of all the things I've done wrong. There's this kind of huge flashback to everything I've ever done wrong in my life that they might know about. It's that kind of thing. If you're a cop and you see the complaints coming into your police station, you start to think we've done something wrong. So I like that. I like the fact that everybody hates them. Everybody. I mean, their colleagues hate them. The villains hate them. Everybody hates them. And they're also spies. They're voyeurs. They're watching their colleagues sometimes for a year at a time undercover without the colleagues knowing they're being watched. So I did like that sense of that it's a them versus us situation.
My guest is Ian Rankin, whose latest book is The Complaints. And as you have told me in the past, you didn't set out to be a crime writer. This is something you got trapped in by success?
Did I get trapped? I'm not sure. I mean, when Rebus retired...
You're not complaining, are you?
I'm trying not to complain. I mean, quite the opposite. When Rebus retired, I had a lot of freedom. I could write anything I wanted to. And I wrote the libretto for a short opera, and I wrote a graphic novel, and I wrote some song lyrics for a band, and I tried my hand at a film script.
And you were writing columns for what was one of the newspapers?
Yeah, I mean...
Times of London?
Yeah. I was their political correspondent during a general election. I got to interview people like Tony Blair and stuff like that. Wasn't much fun. I much prefer making stuff up to having to tell the truth. But I'd done all that. And then
Tony Blair made things up.
So they say. I mean, I couldn't possibly comment. Having done all that, when it came time to write a new novel, I wanted to write about the police. I wanted to write about Edinburgh, and I couldn't bring Rebus back, so I had to find someone new.
Well, the real recurring character in all of these books is Edinburgh.
It is.
And you never write about any other place. Could you?
Well, I'm beginning to wonder about that. The new one that is mostly set outside Edinburgh, because one of the nice things about internal affairs is that they tend to travel, because if there's another police force that has a problem, they won't use their own internal affairs unit. They'll get one from a neighbouring force. So most of this book actually takes place outside Edinburgh. It's quite refreshing to have these guys go out of their comfort zone and have me go out of my comfort zone as well.
But you've also said that Edinburgh allowed you to write a different kind of detective story. If you had said it in London, there's a tradition of detective stories in London.
Yeah, I mean, it's because I don't come out of a tradition of crime fiction. I mean, I stumbled upon the crime novel while doing a PhD on the Scottish novel. So it was Muriel Spark's Prime Minister Jean Brodie took me to a real-life character, Deacon Brodie, who was the template for Jekyll and Hyde. Jekyll and Hyde took me back to the crime novel. And, it was a very circuitous route. And I was really trying to write socially realistic novels about Scottish life, contemporary Scottish life. And I just thought a detective's a very good means of doing that because he's got access to all areas. And that continues, I think, to be the case.
Well, Scottish literature has a weird history. I'm thinking back to, Memoirs and Confessions of a Justified Sinner, maybe the first book ever written from the mind of a madman, and that was in the early 19th century.
That was, and that was also an influence on Jekyll and Hyde. I've actually just finished doing a film script for that. We're trying to make it into a movie because it's one of these great unfilmable books that a friend of mine and I thought would like the challenge of trying to make it into a film.
But it always struck me as being kind of like the basis of much of what followed in Scotland.
Absolutely. I mean, but it's also incredibly relevant today. I mean, Justified Sinner is a book about a religious zealot who is convinced that if you don't agree with his religious beliefs, he can kill you with impunity.
And he has God actually telling him that he can do it.
Well, he has a guy who may be God or the devil or maybe a kind of Harvey-style giant invisible rabbit. You know, we just don't know who this character Gilmartin is, and that's part of the fun of the book.
Now, you mentioned that you like to write about current situations. The Naming of the Dead, your last Rebus book, was set against the backdrop of the G8 summit that was held in Scotland in July 2005. This story has a lot of unemployment. There's been a real estate bust that's hurt development, and the plot even involves an online matter. So is the detective novel for you just a way of talking about what's going on in the world around you?
It's not just a way of doing that, but I like crime novels that do that. I like crime novels that not only have a sense of place and a really strong plot, but are actually saying to the reader, look, here's the mess we're in. Here's what's going on in the world. How do you think? What do you feel about it? The complaint started with the almost bankruptcy of the Royal Bank of Scotland, which had grown from being a very small local bank to being one of the huge international players. And 20% of the jobs in Edinburgh depended on that bank, and then it suddenly went bust.
Well, how much of this was a Scottish affair, and how much of it was a British affair, and how much of it was a European affair? We talked the last time you were here about your feelings that Scotland wasn't ready for independence. I don't know if you've changed your mind on that.
Well, I mean, this was another thing that the banking crisis threw up was the British taxpayer bailed out the bank. The Scottish taxpayer couldn't have afforded to bail out something the size of the Royal Bank of Scotland. I mean, a country of 5 million people, not all of whom pay tax, couldn't have afforded to buy Royal Bank of Scotland and save it from bankruptcy. So it did make people think, because the nationalists had often been talking about this arc of prosperity, which involved places like Ireland. You've just been talking about Ireland. Ireland and some of the Scandinavian countries like Iceland.
And British banks have been troubled as well.
Yeah, yeah. But we, you know.
And of course, American banks have escaped all of that.
Well, some banks have done quite nicely. But, you know, I mean, it did show you that it's dominoes, isn't it? I mean, the world is interconnected, and you can't escape that fact. And when one domino goes, then you don't quite know what pattern is going to form from all the other dominoes falling after it.
So you have been called a pioneer of a genre that's been named Tartan Noir, I'm sorry, Scottish crime fiction. But then, as you said, you wrote a 15-minute opera. You tried your hand at some other things. You could continue going out of the crime genre, or are you back for good?
I don't know. I mean, I have no life plan. I just hope that stories continue to come to me and that people want to read them or see them on the screen. I mean, whatever happens. It depends on what ideas I get next. And I don't know if that's going to be it certainly won't be an opera libretto. That was too much like hard work.
But I'm assuming that all you have to do is read the newspaper and ideas will come to you, because the real world gives us all sorts of wonderful plots to work from.
I mean, you know, just walking around New York today and trying to fight my way through the St. Patrick's Day parade, I mean, there's 100 plots there waiting to be used, 1,000, 1,000,000, myriad plots. So, you know, I think human beings never get fed up of stories. We never get fed up of the structure that they give to our lives.
Ian Rankin is a worldwide number one best-selling writer. He has won an Edgar Award, a Gold Dagger for fiction, a Diamond Dagger for career excellence, and also the Chandler Fulbright Award. His latest book, his first not John Rebus detective mystery, is called The Complaints, and it's from Little Brown in the Reagan Arthur imprint. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you.